Good afternoon. We're back in session, Judiciary Committee, and we're going to have two work sessions this afternoon. And the first one is LD 162, an act to protect the rights of property owners. And Ms. Wrench, if you would start us off, please.
Thank you. LD 162 and also your bill today, LD 309, both address the question of regulatory takings. 162, you should have in your file this, the bill analysis. What you should also have in file is you had asked for, or somebody had to have the 2012 letter from Attorney General Schneider about a bill that came from a study group, the majority of a study group. So you should have that in your file as well. And I'm not sure if anybody else has brought things to you, but I made sure that you had that AG letter. LD 162 requires that any entity enacting or enforcing a land use regulation that creates a taking of privately owned land either provide compensation in the amount of the reduction in fair market value of the land, repeal or modify the regulation, or not enforce the regulation against that owner. For 162, the definition of taking is basically any reduction in the fair market value created by restricting the use of, restricting an interest in privately property through the creation of land use regulated by a public entity. If the landowner makes demand for one of those remedies and the public doesn't respond, they can the landowner can file an action, an action in court, asking the superior court to compel the remedy. So, it's either repealing or modifying the land use regulation, exempting the owner, or providing compensation. Exceptions to that, or exceptions to the regulations, are those regulations that are governing common law nuisances or public health and safety protections, regulations that are enacted prior to the date of acquisition of the property by the owner or a family member of the owner, so it can go back quite a ways, and regulations that are consistent with the original intent of the United States Constitution and the Constitution of Maine. I'm not really sure exactly what that language means. You, of course, had testimony on both sides. And some of the information that you requested, a little more information about the Maine Association of Planners, and they provided you a letter that I actually didn't even stick in your file yet. I'm on top of your desk. A 2012 letter from the Attorney General, and some information about the existing land use mediation program. I believe you have that distributed in your file. And if you do have questions about it, although Diane Kennedy, who is the director of the Court Mediation Service, is not here, I think Marianne Lynch would be able to answer your questions.
Okay.
Just one more thing, that sure. This does not replace the existing mediation program. The other bill does replace with a different mediation program, but this allows people to use the existing mediation program that is run by the courts. So that's why that information about the existing program might be helpful to you.
Thank you, Ms. Frank. We have questions from the committee about these LD 162 comments, discussion.
One more thing that you had asked for was somebody from the Attorney General's office maybe to answer your questions or to provide kind of an overview of what the jurisprudence is, what's the standard for takings in Maine based on case law and whatever statutes might apply.
That might prompt some questions. Messenger is here. Ms. Bessinger? Sure, we'd love to hear from her as far as she's concerned. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Peggy Benz here. I'm Assistant Attorney General, and I'm here in response to your request that I give a little overview on case law and how the courts interpret the takings provisions of the United States main constitutions. As you may take clause in the Constitution, it's just a few words. It says, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. That's in the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. In the Maine Constitution, the language says, private property shall not be taken for public uses without just compensation, nor unless public exigency requires. Those two phrases have been interpreted by the Maine courts as the same, meaning the same thing. So there isn't a difference, according to Maine courts, in the language. So it's traditional analysis of whether a taking has occurred under the Constitution is generally done under one of the frameworks. The first is called a per se taking, and I apologize if some of you already know this, but it may be a good review. A per se taking may be found when a government's regulatory action causes what is or what essentially amounts to a physical occupation of private property. This might occur if government took your land to build an airport or a highway, or in some rare cases, the courts have found that it occurs when a regulation clearly denies all economic value or productive use of your land. When the court finds such a situation exists, it does not go any further in its analysis. It doesn't consider the other factors and says that's a taking, and this type of take is rarely found absent a physical occupation. The more common analysis, the second framework, involves a taking analysis under a broader list of considerations. If the government action deprives the landowner of the economic use or value of the property to such an extent that it amounts to a confiscation of the property or unreasonably interferes with the landowner's legitimate and fact expectations. And the United States Supreme Court set this test out in 1978 in a case called Penn Central. And Penn Central versus New York, that's still the main test that the courts apply both in Maine and nationwide. That's a three-part test. The court looks at three things. And it's very fact-dependent. The courts always say this is a fact-dependent analysis. The first consideration is the economic impact on the property owner. So when an application for a regulation allegedly results in a taking, the court examines the value of the property involved in light of the regulation and compares it to the value of the property without the restriction on its use to make a determination of whether the value has been so severely diminished that it has been rendered substantially valueless. Now, generally, this means the property owner must apply for a permit from the state and, or the governmental entity, whether it's a town or a municipality or a state or some other body. And if that permit application is denied or that approval for a zoning variance denied, the value with the denial is compared to the value, what the value would be if the application were approved. So that's the first part of the test, the diminishment of value or uses. The second part of the test is called legitimate investment fact expectations. For this part of the analysis, the specific, the law, or the regulation are looked at, and facts regarding the property owner's acquisition property, when the property owner acquired property, what the property owner invested when he or she acquired the property, and what the situation was at the time of that acquisition in terms of could it reasonably be expected that you could have this use at time. However, courts have found that landowners are not entitled to rely on the maintenance of the exact same zoning or environmental rules regarding a piece of property over time. The courts have said you can't hold a property for 40 years and expect all the laws to remain static and expect the status quo. But they do look at your reasonable expectations at the time you acquired the property. If the landowner bought the property where restriction was already in effect or it was foreseeable, that fact obviously goes to the reasonableness of the expectations of the landowner. The third factor is the character of the governmental action. And this factor hasn't generally been as important as the other two, although lately courts have been looking at it a little more. Generally, if the purpose of a legal or regulatory scheme adopted is public safety or to protect the environment, courts find it's a legitimate exercise of the police power. Maine law court has repeatedly found that public safety and the protection of the environment are legitimate exercises of the police power. But the courts go further than that and weigh the public benefit, including the benefit to the landowner, of land use restriction, and how important is that public need or public benefit as part of their balancing. So it's all balancing of these factors. One important thing under constitutional takings law is that the remedy is generally compensation, not waiver of the law or an exemption or the invalidation of the law or regulation in effect. In reality, what often is, if there seems to be a taking situation brewing when a permit application is filed, the agency or municipality will work with the landowner to try to come to some accommodation, either with a variance. There are often variances as law to avoid a taking situation. You know, in the sand dune laws or municipal ordinances usually have variances, or some partial use of the property accommodated. So I'm just going to briefly talk about one case, talk about a few main cases that you may have. The federal case that is I've mentioned is Penn Central versus New York. So that was in 1978. It was quite a while ago. The Supreme Court said that in deciding whether a governmental action has resulted in an unconstitutional taking requires a case-by-case, fact-based evaluation of this complex of factors, this balancing test. And they laid out that three-part test that I just mentioned, the severity of the diminution in value, the degree to which the governmental action interfered with a legitimate investment fact expectation, and the character of the regulatory action. So those three factors are weighed. Another thing that the U.S. Supreme Court laid out in the Penn Central test is that you get the parcel as a whole. You hear some people discuss that when talking about taking these bills. For example, if you're owning setback of 10 feet, you don't just look at the diminution in value of that 10-foot strip. You look at diminution in value of the whole parcel if you can't build on that 10-foot strip. Or let's say with a wetlands law, you know, if you can't build on this portion of your property, but you could build on another portion, the court would look at the diminution in value of the whole parcel that you own. In Penn Central, what they had was, I don't know if you've ever been, I have a couple times to Penn Central Terminal's train station in New York. That's what that case was about. Penn Central wanted to lease some of its property for the construction of a 53-story building on top of the train station, and that design involved stripping some of the historic features off of the front of the terminal. The terminal had been designated under the city's landmark preservation law as a historic landmark. The court said that the government's allowed to execute laws or programs that adversely affect some people's recognized economic values. It said the government could hardly go on if some extent values incident to property could not be diminished without paying for every such change in law. So in this case, the court looked at the government act and looked at whether it interfered with the existing use of the property, which is the train station, and it not. Then it looked at whether Penn Central had denied all use of airspace above the train terminal, and it said it did not. It could be a story building. And the court found that the diminution value was not takings. There are also takings cases involving non-property interests, which I won't go into, but pension plans, hospital programs, and the U.S. Supreme Court has said that regulations that adjust benefits and burdens of economic life to promote the common good do not necessarily constitute taking. So the court has much of the discomfort of most lawyers. The court hasn't really set any black and white lines, and it seems to refuse to do so. It says it's avoiding any set formula for determining when justice and fairness require that economic injuries caused by public action be compensated. The outcome depends largely on the circumstances of each. And there have been numerous cases since then, but that's the seminal one. In Maine, we have had a huge number of cases, but there are three primary ones that I'll mention. The Maine law court tends to be very brief compared to the U.S. Supreme Court, which tends to go on and on and on pages. Very unembellished and very pragmatic. And the law court primarily looks at the issue of the property taken as a whole has been rendered substantially useless or stripped of all practical value by the government's action. The first case is Seven Islands Land Company versus the Land Use Regulation Committee. The landowner claimed that because they could no longer use the land as timberland because of some regulation of the Land Use Regulation Commission, it had been destroyed. The value had been destroyed by the government regulation, and the value of the land was zero. The court found that the land did retain value and that the landowner could not claim a taking of its property simply because it could not use it in the most profitable manner. The court said the loss of a future profit is a slender reed on which to rest a taking claim. The second case I'll mention is Hall, which you may have heard of. I think that was on Popham Beach. There, the court found that beneficial and valuable uses of the property remained despite the denial by the DEP of a permit to build on a sand dune. The Hall's property had a cottage on that property that was washed away by a storm, and for about 10 years, they used the property with a camper, and it had utilities. It had electricity, sewer, and water. And it could hook. They could hook their 27-foot property. They could also put a larger camper there if they wished. Comparable properties nearby sold for substantial sums of money, and they also could only have seasonal use.
Ms. Benza.
Yes.
May we interrupt for just a second?
Sure. May. Questions are welcome.
Representative Pettit Bolt.
Thank you. I said it. I didn't catch the name of this case. The Popham.
Hall. I'm sorry. Hall versus the Board of Environmental Protection. Do you want the citation? I can give you the citation.
No, that's it.
Okay. Hall versus the Board of Environmental Protection is that. It's a 1987 case.
Thank you.
So on those facts, given that they were using it for 10 years, they were every summer in this camper adjacent to them were doing the same, and properties were selling for substantial sums of money, the law court found that the denial of a permit to build another cottage was not a taking. And then in the more recent case is Wired, Y-E-R, versus Board of Environmental Protection in the state of Maine. It's a 2000 case. The law court similarly found that no taking had occurred. That was a even smaller lot. It was a 50 by 100-foot lot on Higgins Beach. In that case, there was no house on that lot. Mr. Wire had owned two lots, sold one, and kept this one lot for a few decades. He presented evidence that he paid $10,000 for this particular lot, and he wanted to sell it. He had a contract for sale for $100, and a person would only buy it if Mr. Wire would first get approval for building a house on it. Mr. Wire applied for the permit. It was denied. Unfortunately for him, during the permit application process, the lot was flooded by an ocean storm, so the board felt even more strongly about the denial in the frontal dune. So the neighboring property owners, however, wanted to buy this lot. All three adjacent property owners expressed interest in buying it because their lots were so small, and there was testimony at the trial about that. One neighbor in particular offered him repeatedly in writing $50,000 for the lot, which he declined. The judge did a site visit and saw that the neighbors were currently using the vacant lot with a picnic table on it, a wooden clothesline structure. They used it for access to the beach. There's a path through the lot to get to the beach. And most important, actually, they used it parking for their guests because they all had these little 50 by 100-foot lots. And parking in Higgins Beach is a huge issue. So all three adjacent property owners to buy it. The court found that the lot did have value and remaining uses, and that a reduction profit as a result of the denial of the permit did not require finding of a taking. So that was the Wire case. There haven't been any more major teens cases. There have been a few others. There was one Superior Court case where the court did find a taking and the case ended up settling, the state ended up settling the case. That was also on a beach. It was in Biddeford. It was an undeveloped sand dune lot, and the judge found that it was worth $350,000, and the state settled that case. But that did not go to the law court. So do you have questions that
what
I can answer?
What was the first case that you related to? I didn't get...
Oh, the first case was the first main case.
44 Hall.
Seven Islands versus
Thank
the
you.
Land Use
Thank you.
Regulation Commission. Seven Islands, 1982.
And do you mind just really quickly going over the results of that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was involving timberlands. The landowner wanted to use the property as timberlands, and because of, I don't remember the exact regulation, but did not allow it for some reason. And the court found that there was value to the land for other uses and for lands, and said you're not allowed to get your highest profit, and if that doesn't constitute a taking, you can't achieve your highest profit from your land.
Thank you, Representative Sherman.
Thank you. Just on the wire case, was that actually split up?
It was unanimous. You mean the court?
Did he sell that piece of land?
Oh.
Eventually, he did sell the land after the case was over. I'm guessing he probably sold to the woman who offered him $50,000, but I'm not sure. Yeah.
Can you turn your mic on, please? Thank you, Representative. We want to hear you. What is that?
I have a secret here. You know how much after lumber is taking up Seven Islands, you know what was left there for acreage?
I don't know. Sorry.
And so we don't know whether Seven Islands actually had some use.
I'm not sure what of the land, but there were other uses available, like timbering.
Okay. Do you wouldn't have to suck that way?
Yes. It's 450 Atlantic 2nd, 475, and that's a 1982 case.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Evangelos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the information. I just want to make sure that I understand the concept between eminent domain, which I'm familiar with, and, the highway department comes, and DOT, wide highway, they're going to pay you just compensation. Is that the same as a taking under your definition?
It could be, but when an entity starts an eminent domain proceeding, it really doesn't go through this analysis. It's a different process, and it's a different set of laws, but it could be that a governmental entity try to occupy your land and not call it an eminent domain proceeding. But generally, DOT doesn't get involved with taking cases. They say, we want to take your land. We think it's worth a certain amount. Sometimes there's a battle in court, even, over how much the land is worth. But that's not the analysis that's not there.
Under current law, in the case of a taking, you know, the planning board changes the shoreland zoning, for instance, is the person who claims their property has been deep, are they under the Fifth Amendment just compensation to talk to their town?
Yes, they are.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson, please.
I'm trying to make sure I understand this correctly in context. You've got about disputes that are mediated. I'll have another question for clarification on that later. And a number of people have followed that process. On the other hand, you've got someone seeking to be resolved in the courts, and you just told us a number of cases in which it was found to be a taking or not found to be a taking based on applying, I assume, the Penn Central criteria. I mean, it sounds to me like there is recourse for people, and these are things that have been working over the years.
Yeah, the mediation program is available. If someone files a lawsuit, in particular claiming a taking, they can go through mediation. I haven't had a case that's gone that route. Usually some amount of negotiation happens at the agency or the municipality level during the permitting process. Mm-hmm. That's not normal mediation. But often what I see happen is someone applies for a permit from, for example, the DEP, and the DEP will say, well, you know, this part of your property needs to be protected from development for a particular reason. But if you change proposal to build over on this part of your property, then you could do so that kind of informal negotiation takes place. Mediation is more formal after you are claiming a taking. And then, you know, if the mediation didn't work, you have a trial in court.
And we've got a few of those sorts of things here listed generally in relation to an individual in a town. Town of Falmouth, not mediated, reached agreement prior to mediation, listed. You see some of those, too. In fact, quite a few of them. Some here, city declined or town declined. How does that work?
I don't represent any towns, but I would imagine the towns can't be forced to mediate. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that means town says, no, we're not going to mediate, and we just think you don't get a permit for what you want to do. And then the person recourse and file for, you know, pursue this claim in court.
Yeah. And all right, so we're kind of on that anyhow. Can you tell me, what does the RS under outcome stand for?
Well, fortunately, one of your co-members on the committee asked Mary Ann Lynch that it means reach settlement. So,
great. So we've got a number of those as well.
Thanks, Senator. Representative Ginsler?
Yes. Actually, I think you just answered that question, but I wanted to highlight it, and that is municipalities are exempt from having mediate. Is that correct?
So I think they can decline. Yes,
they can decline. So
yes.
They are right. So they do not have to mediate. And so would it be fair of me to say that if a possible takes was by municipality, the remedy is more narrow, or there would be fewer remedies because the mediation process would have to involve a municipality who could say no thanks.
Right, and then you would go to court if you're unsatisfied at that point.
Right, yes. Thank you.
Representative Evangelos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the taking, you're saying that the field of lost some value is entitled to just compensation. Does this normally happen on a voluntary basis, for instance, between a municipality and the affected party, or does it end up in a court action normally? How does it work?
I think it's probably, unless it goes through the mediation process, I guess it's rare for the municipality to compensate for reductions in value as a result of zoning. It's my understanding that one of these LDs exempts municipalities and one does not. I think generally if a municipality makes a decision on it, as a municipal lawyer, but makes a decision on a zoning application, that decision, if you don't like it, you go to court.
Yes, sir.
So the just compensation clause in the contract is something that the affected party would have to litigate in order to enforce, not voluntary, or is, you know what I'm saying?
I'm sure there are instances where a municipality could acquire easements or uses of land that they compensate people for, but generally, if you apply for a permit to, say, build a duplex on a house and the on your property, you set back 30 feet, I've never heard of any voluntary compensation from a municipality for that.
Senator Johnson first, and then Senator Jacoque.
And so I just wanted to bring another thing. Generally, the people of the community are involved in enacting the ordinances. And the townspeople have to vote on them, right? So is there not a process in which there's a due process for deciding collectively whether this is in the common good to make this change in zoning or regulation or et cetera, in which townspeople have a voice?
Well, I think that sort of comes into the court's consideration of the nature of the character of the governmental action and the common good. When the couple of those quotes I read about how the benefits of the land use restriction are to the public as a whole and also the landowner. So I think that's why the court weighs the necessity for the restriction and the benefits of the restriction with the impacts on the individual landowner.
Thank you.
Senator Volk.
Thank you. We have a letter here from someone from my district who's asking about If someone has purchased land, and I don't know whether you'll be able to answer this or not, but essentially there were two parcels of land either side of a road, and the intent was to use it for it's in a strip of commercial zoning, but what does it say? It's listed in the ordinance as a business commercial district with an exception ordinance. Okay, so the intent, they purchased the land with the intent of making it residential. And apparently now the town is passing an ordinance amendment that apply retroactively to any permit or approval that had not been finally approved or issued, so prohibiting single-family dwellings. Do you think that this would apply? Either one of these would apply in that case?
It's really hard to say. Yeah. You know, looking at all of the facts, I used to get real education in some situations.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to me,
okay. Follow up.
Sure.
But if we were to act of that with a municipal exemption, then it certainly wouldn't have any impact.
That would be correct.
Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? Other comments from the committee? Concerns, wishes, eyes? Yes, Representative Mangels.
I do have a question that applies to both bills. I was going to ask it for the site one in particular, but I guess we could ask it now and use the information again. But the REIT settlement outcomes, I'm just curious whether those were just settlements over language or variances, or whether it actually, in some cases, resulted in a financial settlement.
I do not have that information, but I see Marianne Lynch standing up, and I'm ready to respond.
I have not looked at all the settlements in the file. I could go back and actually probably even by early next week respond to you on that. But
so are you asking her to do that? I don't want her to do it if we're not requesting it, but we reserve the right to decide. All right, you said to Johnson.
I'd just like to weigh in on that quickly. I think, to me, the point isn't how was it resolved between the parties, but the fact that the mediation process did so. It reached a satisfactory outcome between the parties. So it wouldn't me one iota to know which they chose in the specific circumstances was the best resolution, merely the fact that they considered it and they reached one. So I don't see a need for that information.
Thank you. Representative Ginsler, then Representative Evangelos.
Yes. I know we've used the existence of a mediation process as being a remedy, but I would just again highlight the fact that evidence is how few cases are mediated. And I would just like to highlight that I still think there's a great restriction on using mediation on the part of the private property owner.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. You want to respond to that, Ms. Lynch?
One point that was made earlier, I thought perhaps incorrectly, you don't have to file a lawsuit to be in the land mediation program. So you can mediate before filing a lawsuit if the town agrees to. And, of course, if there's a lawsuit, you can mediate after. So I just want to make sure the committee understands that you don't have to file a lawsuit in order to avail yourself of this program.
However, if the town doesn't agree.
That's right. Both parties have to be willing. That's
right. I'm going to have a chair.
Thank you.
Hasn't asked yet.
Thank you. I do apologize. I had a call that I had to take and do apologize. Let me ask you a question about the present mediation program. Is it transparent? Is it being promoted? Or is it just by the state agencies or whatever? If I could ask anyone to the chair, anyone who could answer, maybe you could answer that question. What are the state agencies?
I believe the state agencies and the municipalities are aware of the mediation program. I think I spoke about this earlier with another member who asked why it's not being used that much, and I think that when one party looks at the state of the, when both parties look at the state of the law, they just say, do I need to mediate this? If the law is on my side, there's no reason for me to mediate. So the program is there. I think it's relatively well known. I can't vouch that every town, but we do have these brochures. We sent them out. I state agencies are the program. But parties also go into mediation, as you know, Representative Hobbins, as a lawyer, knowing what cards you have in your hand and whether you need to mediate or not.
Ms. Bessinger, do you agree with that response, or are you in concurrence with that? All right, thank you.
If I may just say, I'm looking at the, which we received a copy of, is the final report of the committee to review issues dealing with regulatory takings, December of 2011, and it sounds like there were recommendations that were outlined to improve current land use mediation, the mediation program. It says the program is underutilized and the following could be said to improve awareness of the program. And it says state agencies promote the mediation program on websites, direct cadres to provide municipalities with copies of brochures about the mediation program. Cadres promote the program on its website. Have the governor's small business advocate provide brochures on the program. Require agencies to send out information on mediation along with right of appeal regular decisions are made. Require before you go to court and include mediation option in licensing process. Is any of that being used?
I know that being included in the option is included in the licensing process. I know they developed a brochure. I'm not sure every one of those things has been done. I don't know.
We do have information on court's mission. I do have a copy of the brochure, but we do have a brochure. We have communicated it. I know MMA organizations like that are aware of it. We've done what we can. I don't believe we've ever had any resources to really market them, but it's certainly we try our best to get the word out.
It's one of those things. It's discouraging that we have courts and we review these areas. This was done very heavily, I believe, in 2011, I believe. December 2011. So all of 2011, we had this whole, I mean, some very, very talented here that represented many different stakeholder groups. In fact, I think Pete is in the audience right now, but Catherine Connors, Clark Ranger, Donald White, Representative Alice Priest, Representative Joan Ness, who used to be a member of this committee and chaired the committee, as well as Chase, Representative Andre Cushing, Troy Jackson, Renata Jackson, and our present President of the Senate. Could anyone tell me what happened with most of this? Did it just gather?
Actually, there was a bill that came out of it. It was the authority of that.
Well, that committee, right?
Of that.
Yeah.
Well, that report came to the Judiciary Committee on the 125th. Majority of the committee reported out a bill, which was LD 1810, that came back to the committee for a public hearing.
Yeah.
And I believe there were reports that came out of committee. Mm-hmm. There was kind of a new process of a regulatory fairness review. The bill ended up being indefinitely postponed. After all the discussion back and forth and all the different proposals to make changes. A lot of it was similar to what is in these bills about a process.
Yeah, my recollection is this bill was one of the last, one of the last bills of the session or the last week of the session or something. And I remember all leadership trying to figure out what to do. This might have been one of the hostages that was taken in agreements. Am I about right?
I think this was one of those bills. If you remember, there was a pause in the legislative session, where all the legislators went away for 10, 12 days. When they came back, there still wasn't a resolution of how to come to agreement.
In fact, I postponed a vacation because of...
I believe you were in the Senate.
I was Senate, I think that I'm getting bad... Bad feeling of this now. Now I realize, my mind is a little murky here. I've been doing judiciary stuff for very long, so I'm starting to get back in the front bike again. So is it right, though, that we get close, though, to some resolution?
I'm not sure how close groups? You were, but it was definitely, there was something that was grossed in the Senate. So it was all about enactment. In April of 2012, it was last engrossed in the Senate on April 13th. I have my little printout here.
Yeah.
Legislature went away and came back, and it was eventually indefinitely postponed on May 15th.
It's called kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
Senator Johnson, you're next.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm sorry, did you have more questions, Chair?
That's fine.
Bring through vacations and all.
I didn't take it.
So I guess my question, going back to the mediation process at the moment, is there any bar to people participating in that? I mean, how do you request in mediation if you feel that there is an impediment on your ability to use your property or the value you can attain?
Yep. Sorry. Yes, please speak. Whatever that was.
Thank you. I'm trying to observe the committee formalities.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
A landowner can ask for mediation. They would apply with an application fee of $175 that provides them up to 4 hours of mediation. If mediation goes on longer than that, the parties would continue and then split the cost of the mediation. So it's very simple. Certainly the application fee is well in line with filing any lawsuit. It's probably less than it would be a full lawsuit.
And that's the only threshold for involvement in the mediation process?
That and two willing parties.
So, what's the opportunity to engage different parties? Who can choose not to participate? Can state agencies choose to participate?
Well, mediation by its very nature is not coercive, so both parties have to agree. Mm-hmm. And either party could choose not to participate, or both choose to participate.
So let me try to ask that another way. If, in your experience with landholders seeking to mediate, how frequently do departments of the state engage in that process rather than choosing not to?
I can't speak to that.
Thanks, Senator. Representative Vangelis next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond to my good friend Anderson, in all due respect, given that the Constitution has a just compensation clause. I think the information of whether mediation process is resulting in an occasional financial settlement is highly relevant. And I just wanted to make that point. And
it's highly relevant.
Highly relevant. But I'll take it up on the next bill.
Yeah. And was Representative Sherman, do you have a question or going around?
I had an observation and a question. I apologize for not having dug this out. This is a very good document, and here we are, Plymouth again. And this question has been asked to the good representative that basically this has been done. And I, frankly, have not read this stuff. I was over in agriculture and all this going on. I feel dumb there. There's some information here that they thought was very valuable. Things should be done. And I don't know, maybe the folks around the table read this, what has been done that came out of this study. There's a huge, huge dissent by a couple here, Part D, which goes on longer than the piece of it. One person happened to be sitting in the room. And so if we're going to vote on this today or not, but I'm a little concerned that we have a piece of document with a lot of work went into some very high-powered people, that if they came up with some issues or some solutions or some things we'd have, I wish I'd had time to go through this. And I'm the guy that didn't obviously pick it up and read it until as we were starting this. So I'm not sure what is in, what can be done, and what was taken up study and put into law someplace. I'm hearing a number of things here that seem to contradict. So just an observation. I will do my homework next time.
Thank you. We have lots of options. Representative Moonen, and then...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about mediation, and maybe it's for Ms. Lynch, maybe not. But so I'm understanding right, TEN can decline to participate in mediation, and mediation can be requested without a lawsuit being filed. Is that
correct?
So I'm wondering if a town on first look declines mediation, and then they get sued, and then they change their mind, and they engage in mediation.
They certainly can.
So I'm just wondering if, you know, the fact that they can is nice, but they may end up doing it anyways if they're facing a petty lawsuit.
I'm not even sure in every case if at that point if they're mediating actually in our land use mediation program, or maybe they're just mediating and talking settlement among themselves.
Thank you. Representative Monahan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one is to Peggy. Peggy, when you brought up the Deans bill that took place on 125th, correct? It was a concession on 125th. And there was an enhanced type mediation post there, which I believe was one of the reports, correct? And it was developed by Representative Priest and Representative Brad. I can't remember his last name. Yes.
Yeah.
And
this was a many-staged process. There were at least two bills submitted in the first regular session. One of them was turned into the state committee that had a very broad cross-section of representation. And this report comes from that study group.
Right.
And that study group, I believe the minority did not recommend any legislation, but the majority did. It came to the Judiciary Committee.
Right.
The Judiciary Committee actually voted, and the majority voted to have the bill printed. And that's what LD 1810 became. So then LD 1810 came in front of the committee.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, there were two competing committee amendments.
Right.
One, and I don't know what was the majority report and what was the minority report. I believe there was changes in mediation, and I think there was also, I think they called it a regulatory fairness review process,
right,
which kicked in the future, a couple of years in the future, where any kind of changes had to go through a review process. So, I mean, there were several stages to it, and I certainly go back and find all those proposed amendments that were out there, were printed, but in the end were not adopted by the legislature.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? I do think that it's negligent. Careful how I say this. I think it's necessary, I guess, when we commission work to be done, especially out of this committee, and it's done and it's presented to us, that we not take that into consideration. I'm hearing concern that maybe we haven't tried to interface with the bills in front of us. Probably not. I don't know how many times that I have seen in the short time I've been here, we've had missions go out and do a lot of work, and then they bring stuff back to us, and I guess it sets around the dust. We don't put it to its use. And I don't know if that's the case we're talking about here.
I think in this case, this report came back to the legislature, and the legislature debated it. As Representative Hobbins says, this was one of the big issues at the end of the session that debated in both the House and the Senate. So it's not one of those reports that comes back and people just stick it right on the shelf and never look at it again. I think people did look at it. It didn't end up with any kind of legislative resolution, and maybe that's why there were bills introduced in the 126th legislature and why there are bills introduced in this legislature.
Yep.
People who want change, the legislature couldn't agree on what to go forward with.
Well,
and the bills that are before you today, a lot of what's in there is built on what was in LD 1810, which was already out of this report.
Well, I think I strongly... I'm not blaming the entire legislature. I'm trying to be more focused on this.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't recall the discussions at my fifth grade birthday, so I don't recall these debates. I'm sorry, and I see it like everybody else. Yes, Reverend.
Thank you, Mr. So, Peggy, is it possible to get to bring up that regulatory process amendment just so we can take a look at it? I can't remember it either. It's like, but I definitely remember it was worked on quite a bit over several weeks, that would be great if we could find that.
Just pay to give people breaks. That's all. Other questions or comments? Well, I think very important subject. I guess we're going to run into the same issue with the next bill when we work it. I'm wondering if people will be amenable to taking some more time. We've been set in the past for doing that, to spend some more time studying this in relation to the two bills in front of us. We've lost two committee members already. We're down three, I guess. I don't hear a lot of... I hear quick.
Yes, sir.
Representative Evangelos.
Certainly the suggestion you just made would be good for the second bill. Is the question I want to get answered regarding is the current system working?
Yeah.
And if it is, I'm satisfied. I just would like to get details. What you asked me about regarding what I was requesting, yes, I am seeing the second bill.
Yeah.
But for this one, the language particular bill is too broad for them. I'd be less inclined on this one.
Okay. Ms. Lynch, did you hear that? And do you know what he's asking for? Are you clear on that?
You're asking for us to summarize basically all of the agreements that we have on file.
I just want to know that on the settlements that have been reached, if any of them involve money, so
okay,
that I can be satisfied that the funds clause is working for the benefit of people that have been...
Okay. I understand.
Second bill. Okay. That's the second bill. Okay. What's late, folks? Are you looking to deal with one bill, or are you looking to deal with these bills? No. Hold them. Representative Evangelos, thank you.
I'm willing to make a motion ought not to pass on the current bill.
Thank you. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Comments? All those in favor of the motion ought not to pass. Unanimous of those present. Thank you. We're going to move right into the second one. And I'm sorry we lost a couple of committee members. They had prior commitments on drive ahead of them. The next bill is LD 309 to connect citizens of the state, to the state's natural resources by established standards for relief of regulatory burdens. My goodness.
This is Senator Collins' bill, and he asked me to prepare an amendment. And I think if you tried to reach him, maybe you can pass it out. And I guess you think so? Okay. This bill kind of has the same purpose as LD 162. It provides that a property owner's right to use, divide, sell, occupy, or possess real property is reduced by the enactment of or application of government to the extent that the value of the property is reduced by at least 50%. So that's the threshold. It has to, the diminution value has to be at least 50%. Then the property owner may seek and obtain relief. And before seeking relief, before filing action in court, the property owner must pursue it under the new use mediation program, which replaces the existing land use mediation. But that's part B of the bill, the new program. If the mediation results in a resolution, then the property owner can go on to court, may request a jury trial. They'll be able to a determination by the fact finder as to whether a regulatory taking has occurred by submitting prima facie evidence by a professional appraisal. So it's the property owner going before the fact finder, either the judge or a jury, with information. No hearing is required and no evidence is provided by regulatory authority is. And again, still talking about a 50% threshold that the property that has to be by that much. Munis are listed as exempt under the bill, so they're not liable under the process. Determine the amount of the diminution in value. The value of the whole parcel is used. As Ms. Benzinger said, you can't just look at the strips affected by shoreline zoning. You have to look at the whole lot to determine what the value reduction is. And the property owner cannot seek relief if the value is diminished by any of these following regulations: restrict or prohibit public nuisances, protect public health and safety, fire and code, regulations that are required to comply with federal law, and regulations enacted prior to August 1st, 2016. So that's kind of an outset. This is supposed to have a more or less prospective effect. Relief is based on damages. I didn't understand that this was, that if you go to court, you're going to get any kind of relief in a change in the application of the regulation, although I suppose that is something that they could, the state regulatory authority could settle to do. Statute of limitations is 3 years. The cause of action accrues on the date that the regulation first meets use. I'm not sure how you determine what that is, but it can also, the action can be based on the cumulative impact of multiple regulations, but each one of them has to have been enacted at the date of this act. So prospective. There's a whole new mediation program that approaches things differently, and it requires the judicial branch to report on the number of cases filed in court under this act. Senator Collins, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, to say he suggested that if you look at page 4 of the bill, the mandatory mediation, this has to happen before the property owner files an action in court, there are settlement offers that the regulatory authority make that would resolve it. And those are swap or exchange real property. Accept mitigation, including payments in lieu of offsite mitigation. Accept location of development on the least sensitive portion of the regulated real property, or purchase the real property, or an interest in the real property, or a portion of the real property, or pay compensation. So if it's a broader possibility of remedies under the mandatory mediation grant. Senator Collins suggested one more thing, which was a takings variance, which is they're supposed to act like a zoning variance or a variance on the local level where the entity that is imposing regulation makes the decision that there's a hardship involved and there doesn't apply the regulation to that particular person because of the hardship involved. And that what a hardship is defined in the statutes for zoning ordinances. I'm not sure if that would apply here. But this is Senator Collins' suggestion as one more remedy under the mediation program. You had lots of testimony in favor and in opposition. Do you have a letter from the Attorney General's office which also says that they would expect to incur costs to be able to prepare for this and handle cases that state would be involved in. But you don't have an official fiscal note.
You're referring to the previous, turns out the letter we have from the state.
You actually have, one that's addressed really to this bill,
okay,
that was
good.
In front of the hearing, so it should still be in your file.
Thank you. Senator Volk.
So will there be a formal fiscal note, or just isn't ready yet?
It's just not ready yet.
Other questions or comments? Okay. We've asked to track down Senator Collins somewhere. Well, Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So going back to our previous discussion, it's about the system's working fine. And the good of the senator to try to help people that are being affected may already be being taken care of that as part of our land use mediation process. So I'd like to, for this particular bill, because the Senate is addressing the mediation process, it would be helpful for the committee to have, a little more detailed information of the outcome of the settlements. That is a full request this time.
Okay, and that's already on record, and Ms. Lynch has that. Okay, other comments? Senator Trump.
Thank you. And this was even more relevant before this potential amendment, but which raises a different issue. But I had asked for information, if it was possible, what under this regulation it would have cost the state to implement our Clean Water Act compliant cleanup rivers and et cetera regulations in the state of Maine that got us the values we have in our downtown developments now with rivers that don't smell and light on fire.
There's not really a way to figure that out right now. I mean, I guess we could. I don't know if you compare. I'm not an economics expert by any means. I suppose you could go back and compare property values and put an inflation factor in or something. But there's not a readily available source of that information. So I think I warned you that I wasn't going to be able to come up with that information for you.
And I had suggested, well, if it's not possible, give us some idea of what the challenges are attempting to do so. Because for me, this is a question. If we're looking at, if we were to enact a law that's going to obligate the state on any action that is to meet, you know, common good and need of this state, such as cleaning up rivers have been for all kinds of economic and, you know, job reasons and enjoyment of the people of this state and our tourism business, other people coming to enjoy it as well, we can't even enact legislation to achieve the things we all agree are worthwhile without incurring significant financial liabilities that we have no way of predicting. That, to me, is a serious problem. I don't know how we would set the budget for next year if we enact any change whatsoever in regulation that might, on a compound basis, lead to a diminution of value of 50% somewhere. And there's no calculation here for putting in the incremental increases in value which accrue through acts as well. So there's no balance even to this, to weigh, you know, how do we figure out which part of that is really the state's liability under this law?
And like you said, how do you factor in the increases in value based on this, any new regulations? How do you balance those off?
I foresee us having a regulation in place which does not have an impact until the rising ocean causes it to be relevant to someone's, a large enough amount of someone's properties. I this is a really fiscal Pandora's box.
Thank you, comments, Representative Sherman.
I can calculate value. In some cases, you go to Portland and look at Munjoy Hill, what the value of Munjoy Hill was 25 or 30 years ago. Now it's yuppie time. You could probably get the value of Munjoy Hill. You can't buy anything up there now for pick the numbers. Or maybe Candy Park and some of those places. So some regulations you could actually calculate the value.
Thank you. Other comments? One thing I try to keep in mind is, as initially stated here, both constitutions guarantee us some rights over our property, our private property, and I think that requires us to keep that balance that we're talking about sometimes as cost and keeping that balance. I want to make sure, at least from my perspective, that we do everything we can to assure that, that those rights are protected. Other comments? Yes, Chair Hobbins.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to at least have an opportunity to read this report that, frankly, I didn't, again, I was not on this committee for those years, and I don't know. All I know is I got into it at the end, and it wasn't fun in the end. And so without making a decision today, I want to find out if the mediation is working, whether or not what money has been utilized. I mean, if the fund is empty, then obviously this year, possibly, I don't know. So I would hope that possibly someone could, I don't want this to drive on all session either, like did back 4 years ago. So I would hope someone could table this and give us an opportunity to possibly, without opening up the public hearings again, because I think those are closed, and that our committee can pick and choose who we'd like to hear from to memorialize or to verify or to look at this report. Fortunately, we have a couple members of the committee. I think, Representative Moon, and you, were you on the committee then?
I'm
sure, but it would be helpful to. I think you, officer, you have a kind of a grasp of it anyway.
I just remember that it was
a very long process. Yeah, and so I'd like to. I see in the rooms people I respect participated in that. I'd like to have a chance to talk to them also. So I would hope maybe someone could table us and allow us to, without rushing into it, but without having this get caught up in the end of the session again, to have a, you know, a full look and review by our committee.
Thank you. Representative Sherman, before
we
have a motion.
Could we table this to a time certain and not do that?
You certainly can, or you can leave it to the discretion of the chair. So you have the ability to make the motion, and we'll vote on it. Microphone. What'd you say?
2 weeks.
Well,
I know he gets in front of us. I see.
I just want to know what the cap looks like and whether we have some time to look at it again fairly soon. You know.
All right. Before we have a, go ahead. I'll let you
have,
speak.
Next week you have the biennial budget hearing, and then you have a work session after that on Tuesday. On Thursday, you've got more confirmations, and then you need to work on the budget. The next week, now we're talking about the 24th, you have your drones still. And you also have the site memorial scout to watch on that night, too.
Yeah, that's...
The 25th, I mean, if you're not going to spend a lot of time on this, you might be able to do that and wrap up your budget discussions. On the 26th, you make your report to appropriations, and then you also hear your guardians ad litem. So
the only would be the 31st then of March, right?
Well, only because we haven't scheduled that yet.
Well, here we are.
Yeah.
If you wanted to schedule a work session,
I just want to give it a fair look. I don't want. I mean, the GALs could take a long time. I mean, I'm looking at a schedule. We've got
and
a budget. You never know, you know.
Right. I'd prefer that you not shortchange yourselves on making your recommendations.
That's right.
So are we comfortable with
31st?
Would that be reasonable? Is there any for a table motion is made? There's a couple others that want to speak. Once we make that, we can. Can you hold off on?
I will.
Please, Senator Johnson.
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not convinced. I mean, obviously, I'm not opposed to taking a little more time to consider what they need to, and I, my inclination is the simple motion to table and. Any member of this committee can make a motion to take it off the table and take it up so the chairs could work out when that would be scheduled and entertain such a motion, and we wouldn't be tying our hands. But that said, I think that I'm not convinced that, given what we've heard today, that between mediation process, doing the work for some people, and if that fails to work, the court with the constitutional question, the rights that people are due under the Constitution, and making decisions, as we found on both sides of that in their findings. To me, that says it's working. So I think if there's anything that we should be looking at, and what I've heard so far, be looking at how to better inform people of the mediation option available to them and their rights to pursue this in court should not meet their needs.
Thank you. Anything else on this? We listen to a motion? Hearing none? Dennis?
I would just move to table it, and the realization may never come off the table.
It will. Okay. Yes, is that a motion?
Second.
Moved and seconded?
That's a motion.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion on the floor? And it's unanimous, those here. Thank you very much, and hopefully we'll all do due diligence on this. Thank you, Senator Collins, for coming back. We appreciate it. Yeah, we killed it. Well, you're welcome. Yeah. Okay. Please don't run off yet. You want this on the mic?
Oh, I did. Thank you so very much.
Okay, we'll be in adjournment.